I am getting real sick of this. I'm getting really sick of this feeling, this pit in my stomach that I have to come and do this show with. Although it's only been twice, technically maybe three times if we're counting the tie. I'm already sick of it. It's way too early to be feeling like this. This is another episode of the Saddle Up Show with Shad and Destin. I'm your host, Rashad McGinnis. My co-host, Destin Adams. Destin, how are you feeling right now?
I don't know why we expected anything else. I mean, the Colts have started out like this the entire Reich era, at this point. I drank the Kool-Aid about this off-season workouts, these extra reps, these jogging after practice. That was a joke. That was a joke. Sorry, sorry. But I mean, for real, I mean, I just should have expected it. I don't know if I would have predicted 1-2-1, but I should have expected the slow start. So that's on me, guys. That's on me.
We consistently come out this way, and every year I talk myself into this team, man. I think I'm firmly gonna stand on, if this is the same era that's coming back for next year, I think I'm firmly gonna stand on the side of predicting them to lose or come out on a bad start the first four or five games of the season. Just from now on, man, I just can't do it. No matter how stacked our team looks, no matter how easy the schedule looks, at this point, I'm over it. It's just whatever. This team really has to show me something. And I'm sure we'll get into that more later on. But do you have any immediate thoughts that you want to get on the game that we're not going to touch on throughout the show?
I want to start out by saying I think the Titans suck too.
Oh, I do. I agree.
I genuinely, like, top to bottom. Now they have some injuries going on. There's some injuries that aren't going to be back the entire year though, and they're going to have to deal with them the entire time. But that Titans team is not good. Their offense really struggled to move the ball outside of Matt Ryan's two gimmies in their own territory early on. That's 14 of the 24 in the first half. So they put together two good drives, in my opinion, outside of that. And then the second half, they did nothing. I think the stat was that the Colts held them to under 50 total yards in the second half. And I mean, that's bad.
It is. Hot take. The defense hasn't been as bad as everybody been saying this defense has been. They had bad moments. I could agree with you. The first half of the Houston game, the first half of the Jacksonville game. Overall, this defense hasn't looked bad. The offense has put them in horrendous situations. We're going to talk more about that offense, but this offense just looks disgusting. Like it looks nasty. It's a bad offense, and it's one of the worst performing offenses in the NFL, not by the counting stats because they're racking up yardage in the fourth, third, and fourth quarter when they're throwing the ball constantly because they're playing from behind in all of these games. So not only do the Colts start games bad, they start seasons bad as well. So
So what's our new mantra? What are we going to put on a hat? Because the run the damn ball hat's got to be in the trash, right? I mean, until they can get any push off the whistle in the run game, I mean, that hat out the window, right?
run the damn ball. How about start the damn game? How about that? A better start to the damn game.
I mean, I'm down for whatever. I mean, I had friends who aren't even Colts fans texting me, "What's wrong with Jonathan Taylor?" All because this offensive line can't block for the run game. People around the league are thinking there's something wrong with Jonathan Taylor because of this.
Yeah, a couple people was in my mention saying he might be a one hit wonder, man. So that's the new thing. They say he's looking
even
like
though
he looked
even
earlier
though
in
he
the year.
basically has had two really successful seasons. I mean, his rookie year, I guess, he started out slow and still ended over 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
But it's whatever. People can say whatever they want. We got to let that go. I think the other thing I want to talk about a little bit from the game was a little bit of a surprise. This was not out there anywhere pre-game, but during pre-game warm-ups, the word is out that Will Fries was lining up at right guard instead of Danny Pinter. I've been a pretty big Will Fries guy. I like his game. Drafted out of Penn State, was a tackle in college. They pretty much converted him to guard immediately after the draft, telling people that they saw him as a guard. So I liked what I saw his rookie year. He basically got the red shirt year. I think he got select snaps last year during injuries, during games, never started a game, but got select snaps in game last year, if I remember right. This is his first NFL start, and I thought the kid played well. I mean, I think he was already good in the run game last year, and I think he showed that in preseason work. I think where he kind of needed to grow was in the pass game and learning how to use his body in that realm of things. And I think he looked good. I mean, I don't want to say he's some great right guard right away or anything, but you didn't hear the guy's name on the broadcast at all. And that's big. When we had situations where that was not the case these last few weeks with Pinter.
Yeah, I think he looked like he fit right in. You know, he looked like a fine starter. He definitely was an upgrade over Pinter. I saw him get beat a couple of times, but it's natural. You know, you're going to lose reps, and you're playing against some of the best guys in the world, Jeffrey Simmons being one of them. Absolute dog on the defensive line.
Who dogged Quentin Nelson multiple times on Sunday.
I was about to say a couple of times. Danico Autry actually beat Quentin Nelson a couple of times as well on a couple of little stunts and games that they was running. I'm fine with Fries. I actually prefer Fries over Pinter at this moment. Like you say, Pinter was pretty much just a traffic cone out there. You know, he was getting beat ridiculously. The tape from the Kansas City game, I know they won that game, but he didn't look good, man. He was getting blown up, wasn't moving anybody in a run game. The Colts, it was bad, man. It was bad seeing Pinter out there, and he struggled mightily. Fries looked like a much better option, and I think he'll only get better with the continuous reps. Made sense.
We need to touch on that the week 5 depth chart came out today, and Pinter was right back in the starting lineup. And if they trot Pinter out after Fries on, and I'm not going to say a shock to the team, because I'm sure they just kept that close to the chest. I'm sure the team knew Fries was starting and they just weren't letting that out. So I can't imagine it was a shocker come game day that they walked up to old Fries' locker and let him know that he was getting the start. But I don't know how he can go in, perform like that, doesn't even get reported that he was taking first team snaps in practice. So I can't imagine he got a very large percent of those, if I had to guess. So to go off of that week into the Titans week, play against an interior that's very talented. Danico Autry, Jeffrey Simmons, both very talented interior guys in the league. Jeffrey Simmons among the best in the league. So I don't know how you can go back to Pinter after Will Fries held his own in that game on the Friday. You have to let that kid keep growing. You can't trot Pinter back out there.
In the early depth chart has Pinter listed still as a starter when it came out today. So
that's what I was saying.
That's interesting moving forward. Like I can't see, them bringing Danny Pinter back into the starting lineup. I mean, we didn't hear about him being dinked up or anything like that. So it clearly you was replacing him because of his play. It wasn't like you was replacing him because physically he wasn't able to play. You know, he was definitely getting replaced because he was struggling at the position. And Fries had a way better game. I mean, it's not even comparable to what Fries did and what Pinter has been putting on tape recently. So we're going to get to the first question. Destin, you ready to hear from the fans?
I do want to say before we get into this, some of y'all were angry this week. We can't play some of the ones you guys put out there, but some of y'all were mad. This team has brought out a lot of emotion in a lot of us. I just want to remind you guys that the Colts have been here before. I'm not predicting they're going to get anything together because they've not shown me anything this year to make me think they will. But the Colts have been down worse than this and found a way to make something of a season. So I understand you're mad right now. Just don't let your emotions get you to the point where I hear some of these voicemails I heard this week. That's all I'm going to say.
One phrase, baby. Barn chicken barn. All right, man, let's get to the first question. The first question is from Matt Merringer. Matt, I believe, asked a question before. Thank you, Matt, for listening again and asking another question. His ad name is at mmerringer5. He asks, how do we stop the constant bonehead mistakes that are killing our offensive drives? Penalties, fumbles, tipped interceptions, poor blocking or missed assignments in pass pro and run blocking, etc. The offense can move the ball, then do something to kill the drive.
This is a good question, Matt. Thanks for the support on the show. You submitted multiple, and I think this is at least the second one of yours that's gotten read during the show. But so appreciate the support, Matt. I don't know the answer to it, of how you can just stop it. To me, it seems like just a lack of trust is building a lot and creating a lot of problems. We talked about Will Fries a little bit before the questions came in, and I think one of the things we saw this week that's better than weeks previous was there just seemed to be more, there was less of the having to go and help and leaving thing. We didn't see those empty blitzers up the A gap because Ryan Kelly left his assignment. I think we saw Braden Smith have his best game of the year. I'm not trying to say that those things have to correlate, but coincidence, I think not. Insert that gif right now for Braden Smith having his best game. I do think fixing the offensive line issues, where we've stated in the past, we're playing guys in positions that they are not naturally fit. So Pinter is not a guard. Pryor is not a tackle. Take those guys, move them. I mean, even Sunday, we saw Pryor get whooped up on that last stunt, where Quentin Nelson's not able to go help him on Danico Autry, who just blows Pryor off the ball and gets the sack that ultimately ends the game when you think about it. So I think it's a lot of communication aspects of things. I mean, I don't know how to explain Ryan's fumbles. There are certain ones where I can blame the offensive line. When Matt Ryan's not even able to step up into the pocket to get away from pressure because there's still pressure in his grill as well, and that's going to cause fumbles at times. When he gets out of the pocket, though, I'm always going to say that the veteran quarterback has to know pressure is coming, especially if you're an – I don't want to call it Ryan immobile, but he's not mobile. He's faster than Phillip Rivers, but that's all I can say for the guy. And when you're that level of mobility, when you get out of the pocket, you know pressure is coming. No offensive line is keeping linemen in front of them when you start to move laterally like that. So for Ryan, he's got to get the ball out, whether that is getting the ball out of bounds. He's now a legal situation to do that, or finding the open guy. He's holding on to the ball too long in those situations, and that always spells bad for the quarterback, for the offense. So Ryan has some blame here, but I think communication and just the aspect of malpractice moves that the front office and coaching staff made, putting guys in positions where they don't play well, have created these issues.
Yeah, man. I think you hit on a lot of those points really well. One of my biggest problems, and I said this on past shows, I believe me, you, and Kiefer talked about it. You know, the communication has to be better. You know, recognizing blitzes and simple games that people are running on us, that just can't work. You know, Ryan has some of that responsibility. I'm not sure yet who to exactly pinpoint some of this communication things on, because I'm not sure if that's Ryan Kelly's responsibility. I'm not sure if it's Matt Ryan that's out there making all the calls and the checks and different things like that. So until that's clear to me, I don't know exactly who gets the bulk of the blame in that situation. So I've been pretty much distributing it equally. A couple of things. As far as the offense go, the defense has given up less points off traditional drives. They have 30, I believe, traditional drives. They're giving up, I believe it's 32 or 33 points. And they have 14 drives where the offense turned the ball over and put them in a bad situation where they're giving up 40-something points. So to say that they're giving up more points off of turnovers than they have the entire season, just traditionally, is ridiculous. Like that is the strain on the defense. You can't constantly ask them to hold up in these type of situations. They're back constantly against the wall. And I know they've been looking sluggish in the first quarter of some of these games. The first quarter of the Titans game, they looked abysmal. You know, the Titans did whatever they wanted to do. Derrick Henry ran the ball. He didn't look pretty washed to me. People were saying he's washed. He's lost a step. He was planting in the ground and getting upfield, man. He against a team that was the number one rushing defense coming into this season. He gave up over 100 yards to Derrick Henry. They just couldn't get off of the field, man. The Titans scored the first touchdown, I believe, was the Robert Woods touchdown. Where Shaq Leonard, didn't get enough depth on the coverage. You can easily see Robert Woods just runs a simple, pretty much a drag, takes it upfield a little bit, and it's right behind Shaq. If Shaq just drops it back, locates the receiver, turns around with the receiver, it's immediately taken away. But that was Ryan's first option, Ryan Tannehill's first option on that play, and it was just way too easy, man. So the offense is really causing this defense, putting his defense in bad situations. And I just wanted to hit on that aspect of it because I think Destin covered the question pretty well, the different things he touched on. You know, this offense is finding ways to shoot itself in the foot with costly penalties and sacks that they're giving up. And let's be honest, Matt Ryan has not looked his best. You know, he's had some throws that was off target. The protection issue is a problem. I tweeted that two things can't exist. Your $20 million guard, Quentin Nelson, can't get blown up on a play. And Matt Ryan still has to protect that football if he does get blown up on that play. Both of those things happened, though. It turned into a turnover. The Titans scored off of it. The Titans had 14 points off of turnovers in this game. And that ultimately was the difference in this game. The Titans protected the ball. Colts couldn't get turnovers, something they was doing at a crazy rate under Eberflus. But Gus Bradley, I think he's doing a good job of getting his team, his defense off the field in traditional ways, you know, not just forcing turnovers. They're actually forcing some three and outs. They're making adjustments at the half, and they're playing much better ball in the second half. So I think that's a plus you can take away from it. But this offense just has to be better, man.
And we may have another reason to discuss here is the next question here. Our first voicemail question of the day coming from Evan from Indianapolis.
Hey, Shad and Destin. It's Evan calling from Indianapolis, Indiana. And my question is regarding the mobility of the quarterback. So, you know, nobody is disputing the fact that our offensive line has not played up to standards. And also nobody is expecting Matt Ryan to, you know, scramble out of the pocket and run like a lot of the more mobile quarterbacks do. But how much of the responsibility falls on him to be able to recognize when pressure is coming and to be able to maneuver in the pocket at least enough to where you can throw it away and not take a sack and fumble. So, yeah, that is my question, and thank you.
Evan, great question. When you're talking about Ryan's mobility, I know people like to compare it to, you know, what we had in Carson Wentz, and they're two entirely different players. You know, Matt Ryan wasn't a player that was signed based off his mobility. You know, he was signed to beat you with his mind, beat you at the line of scrimmage before the ball is even snapped. He has a great idea of where he wants to go with the ball. He's an extremely smart and cerebral football player. So we were told before he actually, you know, started this year. But this hasn't happened. You know, a lot of people was expecting more Phillip Rivers from 2020 vibes with Matt Ryan. And mentally, he just hasn't been to that level that Phillip played, that Phillip was getting the ball out a lot quicker and was a lot more efficient with the plays that he was making. Now, I can't tell you that the offensive line was protecting Phillip a lot better than they are giving Matt Ryan. But Matt Ryan typically holds on to the ball for some of those deeper plays, some of those shot plays, and he just hasn't protected the football well, man. And I don't know if you want to say it's because of his mobility. I think he just has to have better protection. I think he has to have better protection. He has to do a better job of when he's getting sacked, put two hands on the football. I saw him say in an interview before this last game played that he has to do a better job protecting the ball. He has to put two hands on the ball, and he's not doing it. You know, those fumbles are unacceptable. You know, week one, it was the fumble snaps, and now this week, he's getting hit and getting stripped from behind. I think sometimes he's seeing ghosts in the pocket. He's getting happy feet sometimes and moving. When he does have the few times he does have clean pockets and is protected, he's delivering good balls, man. So I don't really think it's a mobility thing. I just think it's him that has to adjust to using his mind, using his brain, and getting the ball out a lot quicker, because that's how you're going to beat people, with process, not with your legs, but with your mind.
Yeah, so mobility is something where I've always viewed it as like a bonus, because it's going to keep defensive coordinators up at night more. It's just another element that's going to have to be game planned for. But I don't watch the Colts right now and think, man, if Matt Ryan was mobile, issues out the window. Because to me, even mobile quarterbacks have to learn how to maneuver the pocket and leave it when the time is right. Because a lot of mobile quarterbacks early on, one of their biggest struggles is they get way too run happy and they leave the pocket immediately instead of stepping up, using the pocket to where you can make big plays. And so for me, I don't think that's what's causing the issues. Now, what I will say is when you have a mobile quarterback, and I think we saw it with Carson Wentz a little bit last year, it opens up the playbook a little bit to where play callers can just do more. There's more options. There's more things that Frank could do if he had a mobile quarterback. But play calling wasn't an issue when Phillip Rivers was under center. And as I said earlier, Matt Ryan is more mobile than Phillip Rivers. Without a doubt in my mind, you watch Matt Ryan, he is more mobile than what Phillip Rivers was that year.
Destin, you're more mobile than Phillip Rivers. So
I don't know, man. I was out at the game for the Colts Titans this week in Touchdown Town, which is in, you're not here. I know that. So Touchdown right. Town is like what's in downtown. There's blow ups for kids and stuff, but
okay. Yeah, Saints. The Saints one a version of that is called Champion Square.
There you go. So for the Colts, it's Touchdown Town, and there's a little area where you can run the 40. And I look at it, and I just watch all these people that look fast running like 6.2. And I'm just like, man, I'd break that thing. I'd run like a 10.5 flat.
Hey, man, we got your RAS score. Don't forget.
We do.
We do have your RAS score.
More athletic at the receiver position than Jarvis Landry, and don't you forget it.
Okay, man. While we were discussing, Matt Ryan's mobility and different problems that's going on with the offense, let's talk about a problem that an overall arching problem that a lot of people on Twitter are saying, and we actually got a question about it. So I want to read this question. It is from Billy Slick Willie. His at name is at WJGRIES Hop. WJ Grease Hop.
So real quick, Billy Slick Willie. We got to clean up that at. I think for everyone who submits Twitter questions now, I'm going to need to like rate Twitter ats. Like it's going to have to become a part of the show or something.
You know what? That's what we're going to do. When we get a question from somebody on Twitter, you got to rate the at
going forward.
1 through 10.
Yeah.
We're not starting with this one.
Yeah. We won't do it today. We'll wait until the next show, but I've decided that I'm just going to let you guys know when you guys submit these questions.
1 through 10. Destin's gonna rage you. So the question is from Billy Slick Willie: is it possible Reich lost the locker room after the Colts shipped Wentz out and scapegoated him for the way the 2021 season ended?
I mean, this seems like a two-part question. Do I think it's possible Reich's lost their locker room? I do think it's possible. I don't think the Wentz reason is it. Just because even the positive things coming from players about Wentz, almost all of them all seemed very scripted in a way, not trying to at anybody, but they were just very well-polished statements from the people that decided to speak out. Now, I do think some people were friends and close with Carson. I think they're probably still close with Carson. I know for a fact multiple of the offensive linemen and Carson Wentz got along. I know for a fact multiple of the receivers and Carson Wentz got along. So I don't think, to me, Frank Reich is closer to Carson Wentz than anyone in that locker room. I don't think the locker room is going to move away from Frank Reich for making that decision. Because if Frank had to make that decision, I think we'd be surprised how many players were also approving that decision. But is it possible Reich's lost the locker room? This one's always a hard one to speak on, because unless you're talking to players directly off the record, getting that information, you're never going to know. But did you see Hines' interview today that Kiefer released? I think, was it Kiefer or was it James Boyd from The Athletic that released the statement first? I want to properly give credit to that.
I seen them both quoting it though on Twitter, so that's why I can't really tell you if it was Boyd or Kiefer. But yeah, man, Himes was spicy in that interview. You know, he's taking ownership though. What I can say, he's saying it's the offense.
You mean to read it?
That is the ones. Oh, you have it?
Yeah, I got it. Okay, so go ahead. This tweet's from Kiefer. I mean, I can't speak for 100% fact that it came from him first. But this tweet is from Zach Kiefer of The Athletic, who said, Colts running back Nyheim Hines yesterday, one of two, this is a quote, not an excuse, but every year we have a new quarterback. Pause. Spicy Hines.
Out the gate.
So each year we have growing pains while we sit here, watch Tennessee, which has had Tannehill, what, my entire career. Pause. Gosh, Hines has bars. He's going in. And each year we're restarting and we have to turn the page. Part two from Kiefer on Hines, quote, so that sucks a little bit too, that most teams we play have an established guy, but that doesn't matter. We have to figure it out and we will figure it out. Those kind of statements have not been coming out in years past. You don't see that was that, that one felt pointed. And
Destin, I really feel like something's going on in the locker room, bro. I really feel like there's a disconnect somewhere. We're not hearing about it. I think people know about it, but no one wants to come out and say it, that there's a real issue going on here between, I don't know if it's between Ballard and Reich or between Reich and the players, but there's a disconnect. And I know our question was along the lines of, have you lost the locker room? And it's possible, man, because this team is just not responding to him at this point. You know, Frank is a guy that doesn't show much energy. I know people got excited about the speech he gave after the Chiefs game in the locker room, which I saw a little fire from him, a little passion. But, you know, that doesn't mean that all is forgiven. You know, just because you come out there and you play good enough to win that game, that doesn't mean we just forgot about everything.
Did they play good enough to win that game?
They played good enough to get the game gift wrapped to them, and they accept the gift.
I say they were taught manners, and they said please and thank you enough that day.
I agree, because did you see the Chiefs, what the Chiefs did to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last night? I was frightened. Like, Patrick Mahomes looked like a serial killer. He was that deadly last night. Anyway, I don't know if this team really looks at Reich as the guy that they respond to, the leader that they once viewed him as. This team seems like a passionate bunch. They played hard. But now it's just like, you know, they're pretty much going through the motions. And I tweeted today that this team need a spark, a joke, some energy from somewhere, because they are not even a fun team to even watch. They look lethargic. They look unenthused. They just look like they're there to get a check and get this over with, man. Get me on the flight or the bus and get me back home so I could tend to whatever I'm doing, my family or whatever. And I understand that sometimes you go through the motions when you're in bad situations, but this was not supposed to be that. You know, I've seen players in bad situations on bad teams where you hate going to work every day. You know, I know players like that. I've talked to players like that all the time. I talked to Kelvin Johnson, a guy who retired literally because of his playing situation, a guy who still loved football, but just decided that playing for this organization and continuing to put my body through this repeat punishment, it just wasn't worth it. Like, I've talked to him extensively, and I know what it's like to go into an environment like that every day. This is not supposed to be that. You know, this was a team that was expected to make the playoffs. It was talented. This was the most they had done in any free agency up until this point. And this was it. Matt Ryan was supposed to be the guy. This offensive line was one of the best offensive line in the NFL, according to national pundits. But we all seen the decline in the offensive line since last season. this was supposed to be it. That's all I pretty much have to say about that. I'm not sure whether he's lost the locker room, but I do know for a fact players are indeed not responding to him how they once was. And we got to see how that situation goes forward.
And I will say that, I mean, I put this out earlier. I think the coaching staff deserves blame. I think the front office deserves blame. I think Irsay deserves blame. But I feel like there's not enough being said about the players directly, because there is performance issues happening. Are the best players on the field, who are being paid to be the best players, who are seen as the best players on this team, are not performing. And I mean, that's an issue. And to me, I think the wake-up call speech that needs to happen, and part of the reason I'm moving more and more towards they can rebound from this, and I still don't know if this regime is the right regime, because I think the speech that has to happen now is, not only is my job as the head coach on the line, but I want all you guys to know your jobs are on the line right now. If a new regime comes in this next year, they have loyalty to no one in the building. You see teams take over and situations just get blown up because they make their own players. I mean, Chris Bauer came in year one.
I was just about to reference that.
And I think Robert Mathis was the only starter that was left from the Grigson era that first year.
30-something players, I believe. Ridiculous. It was ridiculous. The overhaul he did with that roster, it was insane.
That's the speech that has to happen, though. Like, that is what has to be said to these guys, because I don't care if the reason you're not playing hard is because you don't think Reich is the right coach anymore. Like, that's cool, great, but you have to have personal motivation in these games. And I think it's job security has to be talked about now.
Hypothetical situation before you go into our next question. Would you rather this regime go on a run and finish, let's say, 8-8-1 or 9-7-1 and get barred back?
Whatever the second one is. I refuse to be 8-8-1, 9-7-1. I don't care what the next one is, but go ahead and say it.
Okay. Well, I'll just go ahead and say the second one. Or for this team to just completely bottom out, be the laughing stock of the league. And when I say laughing stock of the league, I don't mean they'll finish with a number one or number two draft pick, because they're just too talented for that to happen, in my opinion. But I do say, let's say 5 or 6 wins and end up picking somewhere between 5 to 10.
Yeah, so I'm definitely going the second route.
And a new regime, my bad.
Yeah,
and a new regime.
To me, because going 8-8-1, 9-7-1, I think we'd be shocked if there still could be change. But if we're going a new reset, we're already going to be a situation that doesn't have a young quarterback in place, which some people would argue is not attractive to a GM incumbent. But I think a lot of GMs who are coming to get their own job want to pick their own guy anyway.
Unless, like, you have a stud already in place. Yeah. But yeah, like, yeah. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
So, like, I could see it being attractive to that GM coming in, but the head coaching part, that's going to be hard, because the sexy thing to do right now in the NFL is to go the young offensive mind build with your quarterback. You don't have a quarterback for that guy to take the job for. I mean, Ben Johnson for the Lions is getting a lot of talk right now. And he's done impressive stuff for Detroit. If you're him and you hit this head coaching market, would you even consider Indianapolis without a young quarterback to, like, put your name to? Unless you have a top pick. Like, if you have that top pick, you can at least see a quarterback's coming in. Urban Meyer took that Jacksonville job because Trevor Lawrence was coming. Urban Meyer, before that hire, was seen as, like, whenever he wanted to come to the pros, he was going to be the number one name on people's lists.
Yeah, Chris Ballard took this job because Andrew Luck was here. Let's be serious with ourselves.
But the team is not one player.
Don't feed me that bull. But man, I was but yeah, Chris Ballard is the king of those too. Those little phrases. Him and Frank Wright, man, they must sit in the room.
It could be worse. We could have Pagano still.
Oh my God.
We're just gonna keep chopping wood.
I felt like I heard somebody say that running off the field on the Colts cam after the Colts win against the Chiefs. I feel like I heard somebody say that, and I got PTSD. But go ahead. Go ahead. I know the next question is on you.
So the next question is kind of talking a little bit about how that statement I just made where new regimes come in and just blow things up. This one isn't talking about the Colts specifically, but maybe if the Colts would want to take on somebody who does that. This one's coming from Derek Larger at Derek underscore Larger. You guys might know Derek from his work over there at Bring the Juice. His question is it worth trading a high draft pick for Fields or to trade up with several picks slash players to go and get the new franchise guy in the draft next year?
My boy, Derek. Now, Destin, you said he had a trade package that he mentioned, right?
So me and Derek went back and forth a little bit. Derek, shout out to Derek again for the question. He is an Ohio State fan, so I'm sure there's a little bit of – I'm sure he's higher on Fields than I am.
Right.
So I will say that when we were maybe having a little bit of a back and forth about it. He mentioned a first, third, and a late pick was what he mentioned earlier about it.
First, third, and a late pick for Justin Fields. If the Colts finish hypothetically, where let's just say the Colts go 8-8, 8-8-1, they're going to be picking around.
Don't speak that on us, Rashad. Don't speak that on us.
It just makes too much sense, man. Right now, the trajectory we're headed on 8-8-1 is in our future, man. I'm gonna go 9-7-1.
That's worse.
That's where I'm going. That's where I'm going to go. They're going to be picking around 13th, 14th, I want to say, probably in that range. You got to feel like if you're in 13 range, you could just move. You could move. You got to move up into the top 10, right? Top 10, top 5. It shouldn't be.
I mean, it depends on who you want. Those, hypothetically, the top 3 names, I'd say – by the majority right now are in any order of CJ Stroud from Ohio State, Bryce Young from Alabama, and Will Levis mm-hmm. from Kentucky. I feel like those are the three. There are some other hot names that people sprinkle in. Anthony Richardson,
yeah,
from Florida. But I feel like those top three you would assume are all gone in the top 10. If they're as good, if they go through the draft process as good as people expect them to, they're all gone by 10.
And for anybody, I'm going to run off 10 quarterbacks really quick. If you already didn't thought about draft time and looking for quarterbacks to go look up, I'm going to give you some names. Destin just gave you three of them: Stroud, Will Levis, Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson from Florida, Cameron Ward from Washington State, Jaren Hall from BYU, Tyler Van Dyke from Miami, Hendon Hooker, Tennessee, Tanner McKee from Stanford, and Aiden O'Connell from Purdue. I'm pretty sure most of you have seen him already. So that's just some names for you to go look at if you're already over this Colts season and you just want to go straight to YouTube and look up some things. But at the price of first and third and a late round pick, I think I'd be out on Fields. I will be willing to go with maybe a second from this year and a third. I know the Colts have 2 seconds this year.
If
Carson,
we're speaking into existence though. Carson, you're going to get this under control in Washington. You hear me right now, okay, Carson? You, sir, will not lose your job to Sam Howell week 5. We're not doing this crap. So Washington needs to go on a win streak right here. Week 5 to like week 11. I don't give a crap how good they do. I don't care if the Colts get a bunch of crap for trading them. Like, they need to go on a win streak right now.
But don't go on too much of a win streak. We want that second round to be kind of early in the second round.
I'm focusing on it being a second rounder first.
Yeah.
It could be the last – they could win the effing Super Bowl and it'd be a second rounder. And that's better than me having to end up with a third.
Yeah. I think we're going to get the second, hopefully, if Carson stays healthy. He played well the first 2 weeks of the season. The last 2 weeks he has been Carson Wentz. So I'm afraid – that Carson's going to Carson and maybe not make it throughout the season, but hopefully he does. But yeah, I think for that price that Derek mentioned, I would be out on Fields. I would be willing to go as high as maybe a second and a third, or I maybe even can be talked. If we have 2 seconds this year, maybe I'll be willing to do 2 seconds, not from the same season, of course. It'd be 1 second from this year and 1 second from next year. But that would probably be the highest I'd be willing to go.
So let's say the Colts end with 5-6 wins. They end up pick. They'd probably be anywhere from like the 6 to the 12, depending on the rest of the league. All three of those quarterbacks that I mentioned go in the top 6 before the Colts pick, wherever they're at.
Oh, God.
The Bears decide they're moving on from Fields. You get a call at that first round pick. You're on the clock. And Chicago says, we will give you Fields right now for this pick. Let's say, hypothetically, win loss doesn't matter right now. Let's say the Colts are picking at like 12.
And all of those guys are gone, and I can't move up.
Least those three are gone. Like those guys, the teams wanted their guy. They took him. They didn't accept trades. You're stuck there. I guess you can say like Anthony Richardson's there at 12. So you can
That's a
choose to draft your own guy, or you trade that pick for Fields, or
okay.
you don't draft a quarterback there
I
and you
give you my
wait.
scenario. I take Anthony Richardson at 12, and here's why. I have to take a swing anyway. I wouldn't move up for a project guy like Anthony Richardson
And
because
this
I'm
is and
too
you're
afraid.
probably a new GM. Like you are Louis Riddick right now in the new Colts job.
I see the resemblance. And let's just say I'm okay. I wouldn't move up for a guy like Anthony Richardson because I'm terrified of him. I haven't spent enough time in his film to really know if I'm going to trust him in my evaluation yet. I've just seen him play a couple of times, maybe 3 times this season. I don't trust him enough to move up for him. But if he falls to where I am at 12, I think I take a swing on it. You got to do it eventually. And the new regime may not feel that way because, it's not him that's been hesitant to pull the trigger on a quarterback for the last 4 or 5 years. He's a fresh new guy and he knows instantly once he takes that quarterback, he's tied to that quarterback. People don't like to say that. They don't like to admit it. It's an uncomfortable conversation to have. But the minute he takes that quarterback, oh yeah, it's showtime, baby. You got to see results, not instantly at that moment, but the rebuild officially starts when you get that guy. So at that point, I think I would take him at 12 over Justin Fields just because I just don't like that package that the Bears are requesting for Fields. I think a first round pick is too high for him with what he's shown. I believe he has talent and the situation is bad, but I don't feel good enough about what I've seen from Justin Fields to give up a first round pick. How about yourself?
So easy peasy, I'm not doing it. I love that we were able to put you on the spot and you had to talk all that through. I'm not even considering it for a first round pick. I think Fields has talent. I think people have taken what I've said on Twitter is that I think Fields just flat out has nothing. He sucks. I do think he's sucked so far in the NFL. I'll go that far and say that he's looked like that. I don't think he's been in a great situation. I think you could go out and say he's been in an awful situation, which is ironic because when he was drafted, everything that was being said was that Fields landed in just a great spot. You don't see this often. He's going to Chicago. Hasn't gone his way. I will say it's always tough when you as a person are a regime's last ditch effort, which Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, they knew that. If they draft Fields, it works. Boom, they bought some time. And if they didn't, they didn't. Obviously they're no longer with Chicago. For me, I don't think it would end up being that much. So the NFL is a league of repetitiveness, and to me, I go back to the man, is it Josh Rosen? Am I saying that right? Is it
Yeah,
Josh? Okay.
Josh Rosen and Josh Allen.
For whatever that Josh, I had to make sure for a second, but Josh Rosen, Arizona takes him in the first round, just outside the top 10. He may have fell to like 12. I can't remember exactly where he was taken by Arizona that year. They go that whole year. They end up being the worst team in the NFL. They take Kyler Murray and they trade Rosen on draft day, for a second to Miami. I could see Fields getting more than Rosen, but that's the package that I start off thinking is probably where conversations will go.
He went 10.
All right, 10 exactly. Yeah. So pretty close. And
what, Fields was drafted, what, 12?
Something like that. I mean, the Bears traded up. He may have been a 10.
I'm checking it now.
The Bears traded up with the Giants for him.
Oh, yeah, they did. I think the Bears was at 12. He was pick 11.
Pick 11. There you go.
One pick behind Rosen.
There you go. So I think it'd be similar. The other reason I'm not doing it is if you take Richardson at 5, at 12, you get 5 years.
Yeah.
Of that guy on that rookie deal.
Yeah.
If you trade for Fields, you're already on year 3 of that. So yeah. You only get 2 to evaluate if you want to give him that fifth year option, which for quarterbacks is a contract. You're basically giving dude money. Like money to accept that fifth year option. So like that just is not attractive to me. If I'm a new GM, I just don't know if I do it. I think you take your own guy, whether that's Richardson, whether that's they view someone else in that light. But I think it starts out with if you think those top three guys are that good, that elite, you make a package that's worth trading. And like we just said, no player on this roster will be safe because no player has loyalty. No GM is going to have loyalty to these guys.
That's the thing, man. Once the new regime comes in and cleans house, it's no ties, man. It's a completely new slate. And that's why players traditionally don't like it, because that false sense of security you once had with that last regime, Destin shaking his head saying Al-Qadim Muhammad with his lips. I read lips well, Destin. So it's gone, man, when the new regime shows up. Like that comfortability you had, it's no longer there. So we have one more question. I believe it's a voicemail question. And who is it from? I don't have the name here. Destin, do you have the name?
It is from our boy, The Kitchen.
My guy, The Kitchen, the Coast community leader. Great guy.
Back with another one.
What's up, gents? Cooking with The Kitchen again. Your Bleacher Report, Indianapolis Colts community captain, and a lot of people are calling for Frank Reich's head. The questioning play calling and preparation and the offense just looked absolutely stale and predictable. I want your thoughts on this. Letting JT sit this one out, get his ankle right, take the mini bye, and get things right. Use Hines, give the keys to Matty Ice, let the guy cook. I appreciate you guys. Kitchen, out.
To The Kitchen over from Bleacher Report. If you are a big Bleacher Report user, make sure you're interacting with our guy, The Kitchen. For me, do I let JT sit? I would love to be in the position as a team to be able to say we can afford to do any of that. But me personally, even though I said earlier, I would rather us lose every single game after this then end up in that 8-1, 9-7-1 area. This team is not going to do that. This regime is not going to do that. They're going to try to win every single game. So I just don't know how to answer it, man. I mean, Taylor's health long-term matters more to me than winning this week 5 Thursday night football game. If he's cleared to play, I think you're in the position where you have to play him. They've dug themselves into this hole. They don't really have that luxury to be able to sit a guy because you can. It'd be rough. The run game struggled this last week. Denver's defense is good. And they've struggled offensively, but their defense is good. And I like Hines. I think Philip Lindsay would probably find a way to be more featured at the back on Thursday than Hines. For whatever reason, they don't want to give Hines snaps. So, I mean, maybe if Taylor's not out there, we'll see a difference. But I think if he's ruled he can play, I think you have to play him.
Yeah. I think it's more of a question for do I think he's going to play? And I don't think he's going to play. I'm just to be honest. I don't think he's going to play. I think you want to sit him this week and give him those extra 10 days, the little mini bye that he's going to get afterwards for him to get right. Just looking over the stats, the Raiders ran the ball against the Broncos for 212 yards Sunday. The Broncos, you can't throw the ball on them at all. That secondary is pretty stingy, you know, when they're healthy, and they have a great pass rush. I know Randy Gregory's not going to play this game, but the Raiders was able to run the ball on them, man. So I'm intrigued to see if the Coast team could do the same thing. You have Philip Lindsay. You can call him up and activate him, you know, making his return to his hometown, Denver. The story pretty much writes itself. You know, he gets a little bit of revenge for how he was cast off out of there. And I think the Colts have to run this offense through Matt Ryan. You know, as much as people don't want to say it, you know, I know the offensive line has been having their protection issues. But if Jonathan Taylor doesn't play this game, you can't feature a guy like Philip. You can't pound Philip Lindsay into this Denver defense. Regardless of what the Raiders did, you have to line Matt Ryan up. And he's going to have to throw the ball maybe 30-something times this game and find a way to get a win up there in Denver in that high altitude, where I know guys are typically more gassed than they are during a traditional week. And the fact that it's a short week, so guys will be more gassed anyway. So you have to find a way to use your playmakers. And I can't let this podcast go without mentioning the Colts tight ends, who had an extremely – great game this past week. I think they're going to have to play much better in a blocking role in order to get this run game going. Frank Reich was quoted to saying that the Colts lost the best blocking tight end in the NFL when Jack Doyle retired. I don't know if he was using that as an excuse as to why the run game is not working well. And I can understand that if you're talking about JT getting out there on the perimeter, but even the inside runs, the dual runs, you're getting stood up at the line. You're combo blocking defensive tackles, and you're not blowing them off the ball. You're not creating the space. You're getting stood up right there at the line of scrimmage, and it's just not blocking well. So hopefully, you know, maybe Jonathan Taylor does play, but if I had to go with my gut instinct as of right now, I don't think he plays. I think you call up Philip Lindsay. I think he does get more carries than Nyheim Hines does, and I still have no idea why Nyheim Hines is not being featured more in this offense. That's another question for another day. Dustin, do you have any fleeting thoughts before we wrap this up and get up out of here?
I'll first say, if you're in a fantasy league with me where I own Nyheim Hines, he's on the block. Secondly,
but Frank said, if you play fantasy football,
you better draft that man. Yeah, fire that man just for that statement. That man, that was some insider trading that went like that's illegal. That is illegal, Frank Reich, what you did, but it's okay. It's actually not okay. But the next one would be play Jelani Woods, man. That kid, like, I understand he's young and he's gonna have growing pains, but he has that element of the tight end position to where he can be special if you let this kid get comfortable. He has that run after catch that you want to see. His hands look sure, and the dude's massive. And I'm just telling you, if you let this kid cook, you let this kid get going, he'll be amongst those top-tier tight ends in the league. So I want to see more than this 15, 19 snaps that this kid's getting right now.
Yeah, man, I'm excited about the young guys. Alec Pierce followed up last week with a great week this week. Four catches, I believe, for 80 yards. He's coming into his own in the type of vertical threat that we saw him being before the season started. The tight ends, Granson. I was high on Granson. I was higher than most, actually, when he was struggling in training camp with having drop issues. And people, I always felt like he can be that move guy that Trey Burton was for us a couple of years ago. Well, even better, because, you know, Trey Burton was pretty much on his way out at that time that he played for us. But I thought he could be the Trey Burton that the Eagles had, you know, in that role when Frank and Doug Peterson was over there. I'm just impressed, man. The young guys are playing well. Excited to have Bernard Raimann back. Hopefully he can make some plays and step up. It's Matt Pryor. And I think Ryan Kelly had a better game. I do want to say that. I think he played better this past Sunday. It was a few bright spots on this Colts team, but letting Ryan Tannehill goes 17 for 21. Oh, that just makes me sick to my stomach. I know he didn't throw for a lot of yards, but it was just too easy for him.
I'll give one other person a shout out before we head out. There was a lot said when Rodney Thomas got that free safety spot when Blackman went down. He played his first ever start at the position on Sunday. I mean, the kid held his own. There was no big plays back there when he was the single top. And to be a day three, to be a seventh round pick,
yeah,
being asked to play single high safety position roles, responsibilities, that's a lot. And the kids look good, man. I mean, you just got to give it up for the 2022 draft class in a sense. I mean, they look good. They look productive. Let's just hope it leads to the win category.
Well, you know, that's Ballard's last draft class. So, you know, this is last one as an Indianapolis Colts general manager. Now, honestly, I'm going to give this take and I'm going to ask Destin and then I'm going to get up out of here. I think at the end of the season, if I had to do a prediction, I think Frank is gone. I don't think Irsay pulls the trigger on Ballard. That's just my opinion. What do you think, Destin?
Yeah, I think Irsay definitely has more loyalty to Ballard than he does Reich. And, I mean, he hired Ballard. He didn't hire Reich. Reich wasn't their first choice. That's been his storyline, and now it might be the nail in his coffin. But I think I agree. I think they should be a package deal. So, like, this is not a indictment on what I think should happen. I think if you're hitting clean house, do it immediately. Because if you hire the new head coach, things don't change, and you fire the GM, that GM's going to want his own guy anyway. Like, you're going to have to hit the reset anyway. So, to me, Ballard and Reich, they've been tied together. I think that's the way the league works, in my opinion. I mean, whether Irsay likes Ballard more than Reich or not, you get rid of one, you get rid of both to me. And I'm right now in the point where I think both need to be gone. But there's a lot of football left to be played, guys.
Yep, and we're going to get into it. We'll be back with you guys Thursday. Yes, Thursday. The day of the game, day of the big game. And we're going to talk about the Denver Broncos a little bit more in depth, hopefully with a potential guest.